Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. My guest today is Irene Deutsch. She's the Managing Director of Australia's oldest jewellery house, and it's called Fairfax Roberts. They opened their doors back in 1858. That's 160 years ago. After all these years, Fairfax and Roberts still handcraft their signature pieces right here in Sydney, their very own showroom. And then along comes Irene, looking for a new challenge. She's had 25 years in banking with leading financial teams for the likes of Macquarie, Goldman Sachs, the ANZ. So this wasn't an obvious next step for Irene. This is one of those classic stories. I mean, you know, jewellery is allegedly, anyway, we'll explore this, is about love and affection and all these various emotions. Well, Irene, she didn't know this. She was in love. Her partner was the owner of this business. Now, apart from marrying this guy, very soon, she is in right in the deep end because she is now a part owner and is now the managing director of this business. I want to know, how does Australia's oldest premium jewellery company reinvent itself? I want to know, what did Irene learn? What emotions did she learn to deal with when she was at various banking institutions as an investment banker? And how has she transferred that across to understanding the emotions of the client and of the transaction for someone like Fairfax and Roberts? What is she doing and what is she bringing that is new to this organisation in terms of thinking, strategy and drive? Is there some way that she may be able to disrupt the traditional market of jewellery? Or is that just a game you've got to continue to play, but play it in a fresh and fashionable way? So let's get into it. Irene Deutsch, welcome to The Mentor.
Thank you.
Irene, of course, is the co-owner and /MD of a mob called Fairfax Roberts. We're going to talk about Fairfax Roberts in a minute. But the first thing I want to do is talk about Irene Deutsch. Now, Deutschy, give me the story. Go back, she's pretty young, but go back 20 years. Where were you?
20 years ago, early 30s, I was in banking. So I've spent the majority of my career in banking, 25 years. I'd say I was probably at Macquarie Bank at that stage.
And when you say banking, I mean, banking means a whole lot of shit to me, yes. And probably to our audience. People think people standing behind a teller, they think you'd maybe do a mortgage for them. Explain what you mean by banking, particularly when you talk about Macquarie Bank, because that's not your typical bank, especially then.
No, exactly. So I guess I was in what people would refer to as investment banking. I've never stood behind a teller. And I spent most of my time in markets. So what that means is anything listed. And I started my career in equities and morphed into foreign exchange interest rates, but anything that's listed or traded. Most of my career was spent in sales, which is my passion, and a bit of marketing, and dealing mostly with high net worth and ultra high net worth customers, and also some corporates.
I think it's probably important for our audience because, I mean, there is some relationship between Fairfax Roberts and Macquarie Bank. It's not a business relationship. I don't mean between the two organisations, but in terms of how you cross over from one to the other. I mean, Macquarie Bank is, well, let's explain to our audience what Macquarie Bank was. As an investment banker at Macquarie Bank, what was Macquarie's rep and reputation, and who do they deal with? Who do they service? Let's establish that. Is it different to the Macquarie Bank of today? But going back then, this is before Macquarie Bank probably even had a banking license. They weren't retail. Yeah.
Early days, you know, it was dealing mostly with individuals and some institutions. It was known as being innovative. and full of, you know, very smart people.
It was also known as being aggressive and tough too.
Yes, I was going to say maybe sometimes people thought they were too smart.
It was called the Millionaire's Factory.
Yes, it is.
It still is, is it? It was called the Millionaire's, because the millionaires weren't, they weren't talking about millionaires as a customer. They're talking about making millionaires as employees. Employees became the millionaires.
Yes, exactly. And so it's a difficult thing because you kind of want your banker to be smart enough to make you money, in which case they're going to make themselves money, but then you get a reputation that you're making money, you know, at the expense of a customer. Having said that, I love it as a bank. I loved it then. I love it now because of its innovation. And it was back then what I would call a series of small businesses. So when you ran a business, you were running your own business, and you're allowed to therefore create what you wanted to create within the confines of a compliance.
Well, you couldn't fuck around. I mean, like, if you made a mistake, you're out in your ass. But at the same time, if you didn't do something unusual or create something that was a bit unusual and not out there, but just a bit unusual in order to cut through, they put you out in your ass too, because you weren't making enough money. So either way, you had to sort of travel down this very narrow street. You know, like, on one hand, you couldn't be so conservative and do nothing because you wouldn't make enough money for the organisation, or you definitely can't make – on the flip side, they're expecting you to make the money. So you have to do that. You have to cut through. You can't do what CBA was – Commonwealth Bank was doing, or Westpac was doing. You have to do something different.
Yep.
So you have to be a bit creative. But if you stuff that up, you're also out in your ass. So, like, there's not much room to move.
No, but, you know, that's a culture that you either fit into or you don't. And I thrived in that.
Did you start there?
I started as a graduate.
Did they recruit you from uni?
Yes.
Yeah, so Macquarie used to get out to universities in those days, they probably still do, and find all the best students.
Yes.
So where did you, which tertiary education institution did you attend?
I did a Bachelor of Commerce at New South Wales University.
Yep. Yeah, the great university to do BCom. still is one of the hardest universities in the country to get into commerce faculty today. Right. It's about 98%, whatever they call it, ATAR, what they call it these days. So you must have been pretty smart. Eastern Suburbs girl?
Eastern Suburbs girl.
Yeah, yeah. Rooster supporter?
Rooster supporter, yeah. Still am.
Which school did you go to?
Sydney Girls High,
okay. Smart, Eastern Suburbs girl. That's one of those, that's what they call those schools.
Selective school.
So Irene gets in a selective school, goes to Sydney Girls High, graduates, probably does well on the HSC, well enough anyway to get into the Commerce Faculty at University of New South Wales, graduates from the University of New South Wales, gets headhunted effectively because, you know, the banks all used to go into the universities, I know, because I went to that university, and they went and basically looked for who was good and they just offer them a job. Mm. Picked up by Macquarie. Macquarie only picked up all the really smart, super smart kids, because all the super smart kids also saw a dollar in front of them and they thought, well, I want to go to Macquarie. So you took the job at Macquarie. You started in the Millionaire's Factory. It's a full-on joint. It was then, probably much more full-on than it is today. What did you learn out of that experience in terms of the Macquarie customer, and what have you taken from that to Fairfax Roberts?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I obviously dealt, as I said, with the high net worth and ultra high net worths, and even when dealing with corporates, you know, the CEOs and owners of those corporates were high net worth individuals. So always dealing with that echelon of client, and they're obviously smart and you learn a lot from them, and a lot of them are people who are self-made. So they've got very interesting stories and they're very driven, so you learn a lot from that. But the interesting thing is, and quite often the customers are crossover, they're the same person who might walk into Fairfax and Roberts and buy a piece of jewellery for their wife or loved one. It's a different kind of sale. So in banking, I guess what you're appealing to is fear and greed, people expecting you to either protect their wealth or increase their wealth, whereas when they walk into a jewellery store, it's all out of emotion. I quite enjoy that because it's completely different, and, you know, everyone who's walking out of our store has a smile on their face.
I love that. There's a connection between the two. So, you know, I'm not the world's best at this sort of stuff, but when it comes to, like, these emotions, but, like, let's just look at, because fear and greed are emotions too.
Yes.
And then you're talking about love and affection as the other emotion.
Yeah.
Can we talk about those three emotions for a moment? Let's just start with fear. And as a banker, what did you experience as fear? What is the emotion of fear that you saw and that you serviced as a banker?
Well, primarily losing their wealth or losing money. And if it was a corporate, you know, it's obviously a greater amount of fear because you're letting people down. So, you know, that's where the sort of insurance sale would come through. How do I protect myself from movements in the market or adverse movements so that I don't lose any of my wealth? And quite frankly, that's an easier sell.
But what is the fear?
I'm guessing it's a fear of failure.
Fear of failure, okay. Yeah. And where do you think that fear comes from? Is it based on them wanting to protect themselves, their own reputation, or is it genuinely worried about their client? Or do they don't give a fuck about their client really because they don't even know them a lot of times? I mean, is it more about I don't want to let you down, or by letting you down I'm going to fuck myself up?
Yeah, so we're now talking about the banker or the client?
As a bank. As a banker.
So me personally, I would have wanted to look after them and make sure they were okay. But obviously there's
but is that a genuine thing?
I don't know if every banker is like that.
But
I know
every client? Like that. For every client?
Yeah, but, you know, when you're in sales, you can do anything to get one sale, but if you go about it the wrong way, and when I say that, if you're untruthful or unscrupulous, that might be the last sale. But if you want to build a long-term relationship with a customer, then you've got to build trust.
But is that about your greed? But I don't mean greed in a greedy sense, but you wanting to achieve your budget and you wanting to impress your person you report to. And so I'm just trying to get my head around this because I've never been in this territory, but I've often wondered about it. Mm. I know that my client is fearful of losing their money. Mm. So they need a defensive strategy from me.
Yes.
Their banker. I want to make sure that I meet budget that's been imposed on me as a Macquarie person, because if I meet budget, I get myself a big bonus because they pay big bonuses. I used to pay big bonuses at Macquarie in those days. Yes. And also if you continually make budget, you go up the ranks of Macquarie. You know, you move up the chain. And also I'm a female in your case, so I've got to work a little bit harder to get up there because it was a bit of a blokey joint back then.
Yes.
So I've got to make sure I really play to my client's emotion, fear, and because otherwise I won't achieve what I need to achieve. Is it as simple as that?
For me, yes.
Yep.
So as an individual, you know, I like to build the long-term relationships with my customers. I like them to trust me. I think the best salesperson is someone who can tell you what they're charging and you'll still deal with me. And you'll follow me because you know I'm trying to do the best for you. That's the best salesperson. Anyone can sell something by being mistruthful or charging the least.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you get what you pay for, in my opinion. So I genuinely wanted to look after my customers. I wanted their business to continue so that I could continue to service them. So there was certainly a self-serving factor to it, but they're aware that I was being self-serving. You know, I wasn't ever underhand.
Sort of. Yeah, yeah. I would never say you should be underhand.
No, I'm not a good liar.
It's not your go. It's an interesting thing though, because when we talk about fear and greed, if you're servicing their fear, and if greed can be loosely described as me, Irene, the investment banker, trying to make a quid and make sure I maintain my position and get myself a bonus, which I deserve because I work hard and I get results. Let's call it advancement, which is fair. And I'm a girl and I want to make sure I get a fair crack in this joint because all the blokes are, you know, getting probably a head start, particularly in those days. So it's sort of the two are diametrically opposed, but at the same time they're exactly the same.
Yeah. I mean, well, you're describing a conflict that.
Well, it's not a conflict. I don't think it is a conflict. That's my whole point.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think it is a conflict.
Yeah, okay.
I think.
And I agree. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's the whole point.
Because also, if you're wanting to deal with someone in a bank, you're a client of someone in a bank, and they're the best and they've gone up the ranks and making the most, would you rather deal with that guy or someone who never made a sale because of such
100%
a nice bloke
for fuck
and
sure.
You never got a bonus and never got a promotion? You know?
Mate, I'm with you 100%. So I think they look like they're diametrically opposed.
Yeah.
In other words, they look like they've got conflict written all over it. But in actual fact, it's symbiotic.
Yeah, yeah.
And unless I have that greed sitting in me, I can't service you, my client, properly, because if I don't give a fuck whether I make budget or I successfully help you protect your assets and or make money, then I won't make money. So if I don't care about making money myself, then what good am I to you? Kerry Pack once said to me one time, he said, have you ever failed in business? And I said, no, I haven't failed. He said, what good are you to me? And the reason he said that to me is because he thought, if I've never failed, then you don't have the experience of being able to recover. And you know, like, you're not good at, are you strong enough to recover?
Yeah.
And that's sort of quite an interesting concept. It was sort of completely the opposite to the way I thought. Kerry was always a counterintuitive thinker. And what you and I are discussing, fear and greed, it's sort of counterintuitive to most of us to think that if you all got fear and I'm greedy, that I can actually really look after you. When in fact, that's sort of nearly a necessary component.
Yes.
Maybe it's not sufficient, but it's definitely a necessary component in a logical sense. So you need to have more components which make it you sufficient to service a client. But so that's really interesting because fear and greed, I think, go together. And a lot of greedy clients, and we're talking about the client now, a lot of greed from people when it comes to a client, my experience, or people I know, a lot of their greed is driven from fear. I'm greedy, this is what they say, or this is what they think subconsciously. I'm greedy, I need to have this, this and this because I'm actually feel a little bit insufficient relative to everybody else around me, and therefore I need to build it up. You know, the old jokes about Porsches and stuff like that. Yes. So, did you play, I know you're not a psychologist, but did you often sit there thinking to yourself, this fucking psychology, these individuals is fucking crazy, you know, like there's not much difference between fear and greed.
Yes. Well, that's part of being a salesperson is being able to read someone and understand exactly what it is they're looking for, what's driving them and play to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Help them with that.
Without being sort of underhanded. Like
exactly.
You know, up front, you know. Yeah. But
I understand what you're looking for and this is the solution. Yeah, that's basically.
You must have had a ball when people came, especially the Macquarie-style clients, because Macquarie attracted, you know, all the big names and, you know, like because everybody wanted to go there. Because Macquarie, to be frank with you, particularly in those days, were the best performer. I mean, they outperformed everybody. They had the best access to new floats. They had the best access to everything. Maybe less so today because they're more of a bank. Well, they've got a lot more bank involved in them today, more retail. But irrespective, it would have been a fascinating environment for you to be able to, and a great learning curve for you to see how individuals are.
Yes, definitely. And back then, you'd really had to fight for the clients. So, you know, you were on the phone a lot. I mean, I started
servicing you mean?
My first job there, they handed me the yellow pages and I opened it at accountant and started making phone calls.
Really?
That's how I built my client base.
Seriously?
Yes. So you really had to work hard for a dollar. I ended up at ANZ, which is obviously the complete
You mean you left Macquarie and went to ANZ?
I left Macquarie, actually went to Goldman.
Yep.
Then back to Macquarie for a stint.
Another big name, Goldman Sachs. Like that, for those people who don't know, that Goldman Sachs is a huge global name, bigger than Macquarie, bigger than all the banks when it comes to investment banking.
I couldn't believe it when I got there because the phone just rang with all the big names because if you're super wealthy, you have to have a relationship with at least one of these big retail banks. Yep. You just do. And so I couldn't believe how lucky these people were. So that's also what Macquarie, I think, gave me a bit of mongrel, you know.
Yeah, yeah, well, Macquarie definitely developed mongrel in people. And that's an interesting thing. You're obviously a woman. I'm stating the obvious, but anyway, I'll state it.
Yes.
There's a lot of discussion around this thing today, you know, about women, you know, in business and women not having had a fair go many years ago. This is a lot different today. How do you think those places shaped you as a woman? Do you think what do they do for you as a woman in terms of business or did nothing at all, perhaps?
That's a really interesting question. I didn't my entire career felt held back as being a woman, but I think I'm lucky. I'm not saying I don't think it exists because I do think that exists. I think you can't help. I was in a boy's world. I think it's made me a bit like of a boy, if you know what I mean. But in business, I don't feel any – I could walk into a room full of men and start speaking to them or get up and speak in front of them and I don't have any
issues.
Well,
why is that? Is that because – if you're at a barbecue, is Deutsche, is she going to hang around with the blokes at the barbecue and have a mag to them about footy or Brewsters or talk about you've got two sons?
I've got two sons.
You talk about your two sons?
Yeah.
Or is that Irene or is that – whether she worked at Macquarie or otherwise or is – Or is Oren going to uniquely walk between the females and the males? I mean, what's your thing?
I think I actually feel more comfortable in the male world. But if I think back, I've got two older brothers. I had a very sort of charismatic, domineering father who I was very close to and I felt I loved the guy.
That's your comfort zone?
That's my comfort zone.
Okay. So
and maybe I was drawn to that anyway. Well, I mean, I've always been driven. I've always... You know, I guess that sales personality has always been me. I'm a people pleaser. I can handle the strong men. I call myself the, you know, grumpy old man whisperer. So those clients are those difficult grumpy old men. I love those.
I need to whisper every now and then. I got described as a grumpy old man.
Yeah, you might be getting to that stage.
I'm fucking well and truly in that stage, let me tell you now. Actually, I was talking to my farm manager who's Pete, I guess he won't be upset that I mentioned him, but we just employed – he's a little bit younger than me, 2 years younger than me, and we just employed a young fellow in his 20s. Anyway, last week – he's only been there a week and on the farm. And him and the young guy had a Barney. Pete said, oh, fuck him, you know, he can't speak to me like that and he's got to go. And I said, Pete – and he called me a grumpy old C. And I said, well, Pete, maybe you are a grumpy old C. I'm one. I mean, just accept who you are. I mean, as you get older, you can get that way, you know, yep. Like as testosterone runs out of your system and you just get a bit crankier. I spoke to Peter an hour and a half on the telephone because he's a country boy, he's a farmer, always been a farmer his whole life. He's my cattle guy up there. And he sent me a text this morning. He said, I said, Pete, what are you going to do now? You've got to step back and accept that's what you are, accept that's how he sees you. And today you've got, if you want to keep people of that age group on the phone because he's a big, strong, young lad, you want those big, strong young ladies. We don't want older blokes on the phone because they can't, you know, they can't work, give you the output. You have to accept the way he sees you and not and make sure that you don't do anything that offends the kid today. And Pete texted me this morning. He said, mate, he came in, he apologised, we made up and I think it's all going to be good. And he said, thanks for the talk I had with you on the weekend. I had with him on the weekend. And I think we have to accept that in our, some of us, like me, because I to be frank with you, I have the luck of being able to be a cranky old bastard because I'm in a position where I can be that way. I know my staff often think that here, and I'm pointing to them over here. And it's a difficult thing to have to deal with those types of people, but it is part of the furniture. So you're used to doing that.
Yes, I enjoy doing it.
Because you'll get them at Fairfax Roberts for sure. They'll walk in, think they own the joint.
Yes.
They can buy anything they want.
So some of these male clients prefer to speak to me. I can handle them and I can diffuse a situation and say, come on, you know. And I could do that with senior members of the team, you know, in the banking world, with clients. And I don't know why, but I enjoy it. I love it. I love old
How do you people. Disarm them?
Humour.
Humour.
Yeah.
Yeah. That smile?
I guess so. Yeah.
And I wonder if it comes back to the experience, maybe you learn how to humour your dad.
Oh, definitely.
Were you you've got two
older brothers.
Yeah, so and you're the little girl.
Yes.
So, I mean, I tell you something funny. My brother has got four kids and his daughter's completely – my brother is the meanest, toughest son of a bitch in the world. Like he's my lawyer. He's been a lawyer his whole life. He was an investment banker. He was the managing director of ING Bank for a while there. He's a tough bastard. Kerry offered him a job, you know, 20 years ago. My brother told him to fuck off. I mean, he's like that, right?
Yeah.
But when his daughters – he's so tough on his boys, it's ridiculous. But when his daughters say something to him, he just melts and they completely disarm him in a second. I say maybe in other words manipulate him, but they disarm him in a second and he goes to water, completely goes to water. And which is, it's cute for me to see it, you know, like watching my younger brother. Were you like that with your dad?
Yeah, I had him wrapped around my little finger.
I bet you did. Yeah. So, I mean, to some extent, maybe you've taken that forward into your business life.
I think so. And I enjoy it. And I idolise my father. So at the same time, I think I, you know, am attracted to these older, powerful, interesting, charismatic men.
Yeah, yeah. You know? That's fascinating to me because we're going to talk about your husband-to-be shortly. You better be listening, dude. No, just joking. We're going to go to the break in a moment. I guess maybe now is a good time to talk about this. So Fairfax and Roberts, it's a well-known brand. I don't know. Is it in every – where is it in Australia, just generally speaking? Is it just in Sydney?
Yes.
Right. Okay. It's just down the road from me here. I mean, I've walked past it for many, many years. It's next door to the Rolex shop right there in Martin Place, Sydney, High Street. It's a fancy joint. It used to be actually be where the Rolex was, wasn't it? It moved across.
Yes, well, it occupied the whole thing and then I think they did.
They took the front. James Kennedy took the front.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty fancy looking joint. Who is your client? Like, is it male or female? Or do you know the split there?
Yeah, it's predominantly male. So without alienating anyone in the audience, predominantly middle-aged white man, you know, banker, lawyer type, who comes into the store to buy something for his wife or
girlfriend
or something like that.
Something on the side.
Second wife. Sometimes they buy two of everything.
Yeah.
I'm
sure there'd be some interesting stories, but we won't talk about it today.
There are some successful females. I would like to change that demographic, but that's what it is now.
Right. Do females buy themselves jewellery, generally speaking, as a rule?
Not as a rule, because otherwise with that number would change. But there is a proportion of our client base that does come in to buy themselves jewellery. You know, we've got some successful barristers and people like that who like to come in and buy themselves something.
Female barristers, yep.
If they want something, they'll buy it. And then, of course, we have the disgruntled divorcees who come in to, you know,
trade in the old stuff.
Yes.
Serious?
Yes.
So your client in a gender sense is largely male, you know, maybe growingly female, hopefully for your point of view, because, I mean, you want to have a broader marketplace.
Yes.
Largely male, white, male, which means, you know, some Aussie guy, somewhere between, you know, 45 and 75 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And we do have the young man who'll walk in and say, I want to propose and buy the engagement ring. And that can be, you know, and we have this perception that we're unaffordable and expensive, but we are very, very committed to, you know, our reputation and our brand and our quality. So, in fact, if we have a young gentleman who wants to buy an engagement ring at the lower end of the spectrum, we'll still make it to the same quality as the big expensive engagement ring. And, in fact, I think they get the best value at Fairfax and Roberts than anywhere else, because if you walk in with a small budget to another jeweller, they may cut corners to sort of make their margin, but we will never do that because it's a Fairfax and Roberts ring.
And is that because you're buying them for life too? So, you know, I don't want this, a bit like you and your investment bank, I don't want this client just to transact with me once. I want this client to stay with me forever.
Exactly. And they will come back for, you know, for their entire life, and we still have people coming in from, you know, through generations. And, you know, you hope that these young men build their wealth over time.
What is it that you think you're really selling to your client? Is it jewellery or is it some other thing? What is it you're really selling to the male, predominantly the male client?
Well, it's 100% emotion that's driving the sale.
Which one? Fear? That she's going to fuck off and leave him?
Yeah. There's love. I mean, there's the most beautiful customers, and they're my favourite, who come in, and really it's a labour of love. And we have men who come in and will design pieces for their wives, and they're beautiful. I'm sure some are. It's duty.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's her 50th, it's our anniversary.
Yeah.
I got to buy something. What have you got?
Oh, I fucked up. I got to get her something to keep her on side.
I don't hear that a lot, actually.
No?
It's a lot of, so there's anniversaries, birthdays, but we actually, I see a lot more, and I'm sadly a bit of a skeptic in this area, but and I know I'm about to get married, but we see a lot of really beautiful stories.
Yeah, well, nice. I want to scratch, I mean, I want to just dig into the weeds a little bit around this one, like, if you don't mind, but is it his emotion or is it her emotion that the person he's buying for that you're catering to?
Again, it's very different. I can think of one of our top customers. He comes in and he loves going through the whole journey of designing the piece of jewellery for her. She doesn't even know that it's going to happen. It's always a surprise. And he gets so invested in it. He loves it. So
it's his journey.
I think he's trying to show his love or express his love through the creation.
Can you explain how that works, Deutsche?
I know you're not getting it.
I know, but how can you? I know I wouldn't do it. But how does it work? Because I've always had difficulty with this concept, okay? I have had difficulty with this concept. What is it that a guy is, I mean, it could be lots of different things. It probably is lots of different things. But when he says, I want to buy a beautiful piece for my wife and I want to be part of the journey, I want to design it, and I'm going to give it to her on a particular day, is it them satisfying themselves? And the wife goes, oh, shit, another piece of jewelry. Beautiful, darling, thanks very much. And put it in the safe and she's got 30 other pieces.
Yes, well, we definitely have clients who think their wife's the most beautiful thing in the world and they can't believe that they chose them and they want to buy them these beautiful things. So perhaps that's just, they've, you know, they think they're not good enough for their wife. So we've got that customer.
That'd be an interesting person to talk to.
Yeah. She's so beautiful, I can't believe she married me. And they buy her beautiful things. And, you know, because they're madly in love with her. There's the other one who enjoys the process of making it. And I think it's the labour of love for them to have this beautiful thing.
They want to be creative. They just like to create something.
And create it in honour of her.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them also have daughters, so they talk about having this jewellery that will then be passed on to their daughters.
To some extent, it's sort of like trying to create a permanence out of, because, you know, there is no permanence in life. You know, everything's fleeting and, you know, even our lives are fleeting. They only last a certain amount of time. I guess to some extent, jewellery does create permanence. It sort of says, if there is such a thing as called love, my emotion towards you, I am going to put that into this thing that's going to be permanent.
Yeah, it's a declaration of love.
Yeah, maybe another way of saying it's creation of something permanent that I'm feeling right now.
Mm, yeah.
Whatever that fucking thing is, yeah. Love's a weird word, okay? Let's not get into it now, but love's a fucking weird word, right? For me anyway, but because I use it for everything. I love my football team, but I'm not going to go buy them a diamond ring. but maybe that's a good way of putting it. The creation of permanence for something I feel right now.
Yeah.
And because
– write that down. We'll use that.
Mate, anytime. You've probably got some jewellery here. You just drop a bit of jewellery in my pocket here because I'm sure I can find somebody to give it to. No, I'm just joking. I'm just joking. So, but the creation of something permanent, because one thing we don't have in our life and we all hanker for and something we'll never achieve is permanence, because one day we're going to be fucking gone.
Yeah, and it seems like there's less and less permanence every day.
And relationships are less permanent every day.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look, we've all been through it. The relationships start off thinking they're going to go forever, and you want them to be permanent forever.
Yes.
But nothing's forever. Seems that way anyway. And, in fact, in our lives right now, you and I both experienced this. I'm a bit older than you, but, like, we've both seen it, and everything's becoming less permanent and more transactional than ever before.
Yeah.
So to some extent, if younger people understand it, maybe jewelry could become something that is really attractive or the creation of something special to reflect a moment's thought or a moment's feeling, because we need to create some permanence.
Yes.
We've got to stop being so transactional.
Yeah.
You know, this video, 5 seconds, this podcast, I'll listen to 35 seconds or 2 minutes or 3 minutes, or I'll flick from this Instagram story to that Instagram story, like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I agree.
So it's transactional. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, maybe we don't. No one needs permanence. But I tell you one thing's for sure: they're going to realize as they get older that their time on this earth is not very long, and for some people, it's tragically very short.
Mm.
And you better leave something behind if you can: reputation, families, kids, and something to milestone these things.
Yeah,
that's why we have fucking cemeteries.
Yeah,
that's why we have headstones. That's our last. The only permanent thing we ever do, a lot of people, is we fucking put a headstone when it's too fucking late. You're already dead. That's their lies, Mark. And anyway, we're going to go to the break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Fairfax Roberts. And I want to talk about your new initiatives.
Yes.
And I want to talk about what does your husband give you when, you know, you and your husband be, you and he own a fucking retail, a jewelry store. He's not going to give you jewelry, I guess. Let's go to the break and we'll come back.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, back from the break. I'm here with Irene Deutsch, and she's from Fairfax Roberts. She's a co-owner and the managing director of the organization. It's a well-known organization, at least from my point of view. We've been covering off all sorts of things, established who the client of Fairfax Roberts is, and to some extent, what the emotion is that they're selling to, what Fairfax Roberts is servicing. What I want to talk to you about, though, now, Irene, is that I understand that you guys are sort of pivoting your business a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. So is that because there's a market segment that you've missed for a long, long time, like a less expensive, or can you explain the buy Fairfax and Roberts, what that more means?
Yeah. Well, it's a diffusion range of jewellery that we launched to go in certain stores. And it was more just of a business.
What does that mean, diffusion? Sorry?
Diffusion is a a less expensive range. So basically, you know, it's still got our name to it. It still goes through the same quality control as our high-end jewellery, but it's just at a lower price point. So instead of being gold, it's gold-plated. Instead of being saltwater pearls, it's freshwater pearls. But it's still beautifully put together, and it's affordable. So some of the ladies out there who purchase their clothing from stores, you know, at a lower price point, they can have a little piece of Fairfax and Roberts to take home.
Is that a different age group?
It's probably, you know, middle-aged to older ladies, and really it's a B2B proposition, so business to business. It's something that we can do, you know, high volume, lower value, and we white label the stores.
Fairfax Roberts sources this stuff, mm-hmm. and then you go on to another jewellery store and you provide...
More like a fashion store. So you go in to buy clothing and there's something there that's, you know, they say, oh, I know that brand and I've got a piece of Fairfax and Roberts. That's sort of where it was born from. So we were just a B2C proposition.
People came to you, to your store?
Yes.
Yep.
So high-end customers came in to buy engagement rings and high-end jewellery, you know, for gifting purposes. Now this is catering to a lower market. You get a little piece of what we do. And it happens everywhere. There's a lot of stores, a lot of sort of high-end brands that do this now. And there's a lot of collaborations you might not know, but, you know, like in Target – you know, there might be a collection designed for Target by Stella McCartney or a high-end fashion designer. It's sort of popular these days. And
is it gives it
everyone
right?
And they sell out in minutes. And we would more go for a chain of stores.
Right.
So, you know, obviously there's a lot more benefit
in it. Can you give an example of a chain?
Well, we will be in something like a Noni B.
Noni B,
so
okay.
Our customer.
That's a ladies brand?
Yep. It's a ladies brand. You'd find it in shopping centres
yep.
around Australia.
Yep.
And
there'll be some dedicated section in there.
Dedicated section.
With all your stuff.
Yes.
And it'll say buy Fairfax Roberts.
Buy Fairfax and Roberts. Looks beautiful on. I wear it. I mix it. You know, and a lot of people, again, in this day and age might mix something designer with something from Zara.
Is the style of it cool and sort of on trend, or is it the same style as what you've got on your ears at the moment, but the materials aren't as expensive?
Bit of both.
You got something, show me.
Have a look.
Yeah, give me a look.
So it's a beautiful box and then this beautiful suede pouch. So even when the ladies receive that, they get very excited. So this is amethyst in 18 karat gold. It's a stud.
It was a little
cute. It's little.
So what is it? An earring. Yep.
An amethyst. Yep. So we use semi-precious stones, gemstones, but they look lovely on and people are excited to receive them. We do it, sell a lot for gifting and also for bridal. So if someone wants...
That looks cool.
Yeah, so these are gorgeous freshwater pearls.
What's the difference between freshwater and saltwater? I mean, like...
The amount of pearls that are created in the oyster shell. So, you know, if you only have one pearl come out of an oyster shell, it's a lot more valuable. We get these from a farm, an oyster farm, and until COVID, our production, head of production used to fly and pick each pearl from the farm. So we sell the saltwater pearls in our store. At Fairfax and
Roberts.
They're
called South Sea Pearls, aren't they?
So South Sea Pearls.
Yep.
And then we sell the freshwater pearls, you know, via this mechanism. So this would be, you know, $100-something, where the others are thousands.
Right.
But, you know, a lady will feel so happy and special wearing this. So we call it out of Fusion brand. It's great for gifting and for bridal. So a lot of people who come into our store, there's always a bridal element with their engagement rings, etc. But they'll buy that for the mother of the bride or some pearl earrings for the bridesmaids' gifts and things like that.
Okay, so it's really for gifting.
Yes.
But not necessarily a bloke, a wealthy white male to his missus or his girlfriend or
no.
whatever it is. It's more maybe the bride to the bridesmaids. Or
yes. And we might have – so we have someone walk into our store and say, I'm here to buy something for my wife for her 50th, and he'll buy something from Fairfax and Roberts, a beautiful piece of high-end jewellery. And while he's in there, he'll say, you know what, it's my niece's birthday on the weekend, my goddaughter's birthday, I've got to get my EA something for Christmas,
something
like that.
I like that.
Yeah. Yes. And so
– that's a nicely, beautifully boxed. I mean, you guys
boxed.
Can't see this. It's a very subtle –
yeah.
Tan colour, it's quite
because
nice.
Because we want to do
smoky
everything
colour.
The best. Mm. And so this allows for us to have someone in the store, and I want the store, when you say pivoting, to be an experience that you come in and it's like a store within a store. You know, there's beautiful high-end jewellery, but there's other things of interest.
But you can get this at some other place too.
And you can buy this at other places.
Noni B is an example.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then we also would white label, so it might be not called Fairfax and Roberts, but they get our quality. So, and they love it because they don't get any returns because it is high quality.
Yeah, so what you're saying though is that instead of having buy Fairfax and Roberts on there, you might put Noni B on there for argument's sake. Yeah, yeah.
And we'll just produce it for them.
That's what white label means. A lot of people don't know what that means.
Yes.
But white labeling means just putting putting someone else's label on there, and but you do the whole lot.
Yes.
And is this stuff able to be bought online as well?
Yes.
From you?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So you've got an online strategy. You've got a B2B strategy.
Yes.
As well as your traditional B2C strategy from your head office here, your big store here. Do you have other stores or just one?
No, we just have the one. Yeah. So that therefore the online component does become important.
Right. And so how do you market this? I mean, or do you try and don't market it because you don't want to compete with your white label store, so to speak?
Yeah, we allow the white label stores to take the lead on this. We have an element of it in store. We do have a following and, we, you know, for this sort of thing, it's mainly through social media that you try and
So is it off the back of Fairfax Roberts? Is it Fairfax and Roberts' social media platform that you use to promote your stuff?
So this – Fairfax and Roberts has an Instagram account.
Yep, yep.
Fairfax and Roberts has an Instagram account.
Right.
And the kind of people that follow it might be different. And it's going quite well. And what I really want to do is sort of beef up that B2B component of it. So where we will white label for the a chain of fashion stores that may have, you know, a gap in this area. So their main skill is to do clothing and we can provide the jewellery.
So,
costume jewellery, but it's
– I was going to say it is sort of costume jewellery, but it's just a bit better.
One step up.
Yeah, one step up. So – and costume jewellery, I mean, please indulge me, but that's valued by women. Women dig it. They think that's cool.
Yeah. Well, this, you know, you can play with, you can put on with your different outfits and also because it's real, so that's good quality, but it's not, so it doesn't really break the bank, so to speak. So it also appeals to a young corporate.
You don't have to insure it. If you lose it, doesn't matter that much.
They wear it to work. It looks smart. They can wear it out that night. We've got pearls, metals and gemstones, a whole lot of stuff.
Well, let's talk about the various product lines, if you will.
Yes.
Excuse whatever you guys call it. In terms of your audience, let's say, let's not talk about the 45 plus audience. Let's talk about the younger audience. I mean, I'm assuming you want to get to them. They probably don't go to 90B, but I'm sure there's a chain of stores you use that the younger people go to. I don't know if you're at Zara or whatever, but like one of those sort of stores. Let's just say for argument's sake. What research do you do to see whether or not the new young executive at Macquarie Bank, female, BCom, honours degree, University of New South Wales, just been recruited by Macquarie, decided to do a PhD in computer science. She's 25 years of age, hotshot in terms of her job, her work. What research do you do? Because she's not going to wear pearls.
Well, you know what, pearls
is she
quite in fashion. Maybe that.
I don't know. I'm being rhetoric in that sense. Yeah.
Yes. So we have a head of production that works for the store who's very, very. I call her Nostradamus because she predicts every trend that's coming, and she's.
Well, how does she? That's what I want to know. That's what I want my audience to find out. How do you work this shit out? You can't just produce what you want and put it in there so they'll buy it because you have to. Produce what they want to buy.
Yeah. So we understand what fashion is coming, what fashion trends are coming for the upcoming seasons, and then we match jewellery to it.
Is it about – so I don't understand this. This one, when you say fashion trends, so they don't buy this for as a classic thing. They buy it as a fashion thing.
Yes. Well, it's a bit of both because I think pearls are always considered classic. The rest are a fashion thing. We try and make ours have an element of classic to it because of our name and our brand and our heritage. But we are all influenced. We are liking what we're liking right now and wearing what we're wearing right now because someone told us that that was in.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's just a fact. And so we can feed into that information just as much as anyone else. And if we're dealing with a fashion chain, we will be speaking to them. They're producing 6 months ahead.
So you find out what they're gonna what clothes they're gonna bring out, and you asking them what jewelry the people
so
might
this
want
will,
to.
Purple winter that's coming.
Is that right?
Everybody, yes.
Purple's a winter color. Is that right?
Yep.
It's coming. Okay. Mm. So we're ahead of our time here. So we're
ready to go.
Okay. Great. And but I'm the sort of guy, if I had a daughter, like she'd have all the most expensive jewelry in the world. Like I'd be completely fucked. I mean, I'd have no idea, and I'd just be buying whatever she said. Dad, I need this. Dad, that. Like I had four boys and didn't have any daughters, but but my gut feeling, because my mother used to always say to me, bless her soul, but she used to always say to me, pearls are a really important item for a female. My mum used to always say to me, and obviously she's old school, but she used to always say that. Is that still the case? It's nearly like a must have in your.
Yes, I think so. It's a classic, and they're beautiful, and they're elegant, and they.
But is that because you and I are a little bit older? Deutsche Lehrer, or is it because is that how they think, the younger girls?
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, they've been there's all different iterations of pearls, but and you know, sort of anything bigger and a bit misshapen, a bit off kilter, has definitely been in fashion. But I think a classic strand of pearls always looks beautiful.
Because the younger people will use the excuse, and I've heard this, the younger people will use the excuse, I'll buy this because it's cool, it's quirky, and largely it's not as expensive. Generally speaking, in terms of design, a lot of the really quirky stuff is a bit cheaper. And the younger people say, well, therefore I like quirky because they're not stupid.
Yeah.
And they're very transactional. So they're a bit of a throwaway society, or I'll cast it aside if it didn't work and I'll go get something else. Is that correct?
Yes and no. So, you know, obviously if you're buying yourself diamond jewellery, you're not going to cast that aside. And that's still happening. So we're still, you know, a lot of our business is young people coming in for their engagement rings. And, you know, they might be influenced by the current fashion. And they'll bring a photo in of someone they know who's famous, an influencer, a celebrity, and say, I want a ring that looks
like
that. Oh, really? Yeah.
Serious?
Yeah. But there's an element of permanence to that.
Cool. Yeah, it's cool.
But I think they're very good at mixing both. So you have something expensive and something not so expensive that, you know, they'll wear together.
And where do you think, as a reflection or as an observation on that market between 20 and 30, where do you think they're going? I mean, are they just going to over time merge into the traditional classic type of jewellery and just go the old system, like things that Fairfax Roma has been doing for 100 years? Or do you think jewellery is going to change over time and there's a new era of people and therefore that's the reason why you've got your new range? Where do you think jewellery is going?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because I watch the young generation and I lament with, you know, just their obsession with material things. Having said that, you know, I love beautiful, sparkly, shiny things just as much as anyone else. And I think, you know, a lot of the time you do revert to the classic. I can't see disruption of jewellery in the sense that there's suddenly a whole new look because it's that classic that is what makes it beautiful. You know, there's obviously these lab-grown diamonds, which is not something we'd go into, but, you know, people like those because they can get something a lot bigger for what they can afford.
Right.
So there's definitely this movement towards everything having to be bigger and flashier.
Can you tell? Can your people in your shop?
See, it is very hard to tell.
Is it? Yeah. Mm. So like if you get a lab grown, so to speak, diamond that's like a carat, and then you get one that got dug out of the ground that's a carat.
Yeah.
And they're both cut. Let's say
it can be very difficult to the human eye. There is machinery that can detect it, but the reason that a lot of young people were moving towards it is because they thought it was better for the environment. You know, there's a lot of people that don't.
There's no mining.
Yes, and all that sort of stuff. But having said that, I think the amount of pressure that's exerted on this stone to create the lab-grown diamond, and they're now sort of working out that creates a lot of emissions, so it's not as sustainable as once thought. So it'll be interesting to see where that industry goes.
This is a out there question, but do you ever sort of step back and say, hard for you to answer this one, I guess, but what the fuck? Like a little thing so small. Sure, it was under thousands of years, of millions of years of intense pressure and heat, and it's formed a diamond out of a bit of carbon. People are prepared to pay me a shitload of money for that. Do you ever think, what the fuck? Like, is this all bullshit? Or, I mean, it's hard for you to answer because, you know, it's your living, but do you ever step back and think about that? Like,
yeah.
I mean, because it's one of the big mysteries to me, honestly. It is.
I know, but I don't understand why someone spends hundreds of thousands of dollars on a car.
Me either.
No.
Not anymore. I used to.
Yeah. So, but don't you ever think, maybe I should just go live on a desert island and grow my own vegetables?
Yeah.
I have that thought.
Yeah. And how do you reconcile it? What do you do?
Well, that's hard because then I look down at the cabinets and everything's sparkling up at me. I think,
what is that? It gets everybody.
I don't know. Health, all these other things are far more important. But why do we still get, you know, what are you wearing?
What is that?
Swatch right now?
No. I've got my IWC solid gold, white gold watch.
Why do we love that?
Well, I bought that for myself 20 years ago as a present because I just sold Wizard and I thought, I've never had a really expensive watch, I'm going to get one. And I love this watch. It's sort of become part of my arm now. I don't even look at it.
Yeah, so it has meaning. So I guess an engagement ring has meaning. It comes back to that declaration of love. And as we said, you know, I'm about to go the second time. And if he said, you don't need a ring, I probably wouldn't have been happy with
that.
He
said, fuck you.
And of course I said,
what's his name?
We own a jewellery shop.
What's
his name? His name's Morris.
Morris. Morris what? What's his second name?
He's going to kill me. Morris Simons.
Morris Simons. Okay. So Morris... Did he buy Fairfax Roberts?
Yes.
Yes. Because I remember someone else owned Fairfax Roberts many years ago. A tall guy with grey hair. I can't remember his name.
Well, there was originally obviously Fairfax and Roberts.
There were people called Fairfax and Roberts. Yes. Yeah.
And then there was someone else and he did buy it. He bought it 20-odd years ago.
Yeah, he was from Hong Kong. He came to Australia from Hong Kong. The guy he worked for was a client of mine many years ago. I won't say his name, but his nickname in Hong Kong was a Smiling Tiger. He was a very, very famous guy and unfortunately died. But the guy who bought Fairfax Roberts was his right-hand man. And he came to Australia because the business was sold in Hong Kong, and he came to Australia and he bought Fairfax Roberts. He told me about it. So since then, Morris has bought Fairfax Roberts.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're marrying Morris. Not very soon.
Yes, in 10 days' time.
In 10 days' time. Wow. And now so
blushing bride.
And so you've gone from being a hard-ass but very effective investment banker into the jewellery world.
Yes. So I quit banking a few years ago.
I remember we talked about
this. Yes, remember I came.
Yeah,
so I was having a moment in time.
Yep.
I came to speak to you, get your advice.
Yep.
And I was going to just consult, you know, my kids have finished private school. So I thought I can take a step back a little bit.
Expensive exercise.
Yes. And, you know, work a little bit less, and I was going to consult. And Morris at the time said, why can't you help me?
Yep.
So I started to help him with Fairfax and Roberts, and now I've sort of ended up running it and still thinking about doing my own thing. And he said, okay, what if I make you a partner and gift you half of the business? So then I thought, okay, now I'm interested.
That's a different deal.
Skin in the game. Yep.
And can you tell me how your organization, Fairfax Roberts, how do you strategize where the market's going to? Do you collaborate, or is it a collaboration, or is it Irene says this or Morris says that? How does it work in an organization been around for 100 years?
Yes. So I, you know, am a banker through and through. I didn't really know the jewellery world. All I know is I like it. and so I've got a great team around me who do understand jewellery, and I'm someone who is very collaborative. I'm very transparent, and I really like to get the staff involved in all the decision. We've got a workshop, so we make the jewellery in-house, which is a big selling point for us, but it's also beautiful. So the team and I come up with what's going forward. And generally the decisions I make will be based on the fact that I think, as someone who may represent our customer base, I like it. My salespeople tell me it's something they can sell. And the people who work for me who make jewellery, you know, say this is good quality. And if I can tick those three ticks, then I'll sort of
move. And then pricing, how do you price?
Well, the majority of what we do is custom made. So it's piece by piece. Believe it or not, there's very little margin in a diamond. So, you know, that you don't make a lot of money there. We just price up the goods we use and the labour that goes into it.
But there's stuff in your window. Do you sell stuff out of the window, or do you – everything's like bespoke, so to speak?
We have stuff in the shop that people buy. So a lot of it is bespoke. There's a few pieces that we make that are in the showroom that people can come in and buy. We also have another brand that we sell called David Yurman, which is a very successful US brand. I believe outsell Tiffany's in the US, and that does very well for us as well. So a lot of people come in to buy that.
So I'm just looking at you I'm listening to you, and I've known you for a long time, and I'm thinking at the end of young James Kennedy, who's not young anymore, but maybe 40 or something, but who's next door to you in the Rolex store there, and they have jewellery stores down in the Crown, et cetera. And I was thinking of his mum, Martha, who I've known for a million years. You know Martha?
No, but my father was Hungarian.
Yeah, yeah.
And his father was Hungarian, yeah, and they knew each other.
Louis was a client of mine.
Right.
That's how I know James. So I remember old Louis Kennedy, James's dad, and Louis married a woman called Martha, a Greek woman, and her sister Rose. And he married both of them.
Yes. Thank God.
And they had a shop in Double Bay, and it was called LK Jewelers in those days. And Louis unfortunately passed away, but many, many years ago. And James took over as a kid, and And I was just thinking, Martha was a massive part of the success of that business. Louis was always sitting in the Cosmopolitan Double Bay sipping coffee, but it was Martha and her sister always behind the counter. One of the things I noticed is that Louis was good, great. And as you say, he was a real wily old Hungarian dude. And I'm sure he was really good on cost of goods, like buying things well. You know, like he was smart. He knew the jewelry industry. But Martha drove it. She really pushed hard. And she was much younger than Louis. And a business needs to be revitalized every now and then. I'm like, just my feeling is, I know, disrespect to Morris, I don't even know Morris, but I'm just wondering whether or not he gave you half. He loves you, all that sort of stuff. That's better than a diamond ring, by the way. He's given you all the diamond rings, but he loves you. But really it's smart that he's got someone like Irene in there who's younger and has got all this great experience, but she's a driven person. Do you sort of read it that way? I mean, am I on the money here?
Yeah, so without, you know,
I'm not putting anyone down.
But I wouldn't have taken that job if someone offered me that job.
Yeah.
I think he's got someone
who's
well qualified for the job. And I've come in with a new set of eyes. So
yeah, totally.
A, we are partners, so, you know, it's more of a family business. I'm driven and there's that element of ownership and care rather than having someone that you've hired to put in the job.
Or rather than you working for your husband as well.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same.
No, and we're a partnership and we talk about it at home and we really enjoy that part of our relationship. You know, that's, I think, one of the attractions.
Gives you something in common.
And so we love all of that. And not to put down any of my predecessors, but they weren't wasn't the same for them. Yeah. It was harder for them because they did report into him and they didn't have the skin in the game. I am driven. I always have been driven. I can't help that part of me. So I really want to make a real go of it.
Yeah, but also it's not just skin in the game. I often say this to people, if you're employing somebody, if you want someone to be in your business, you've got to have people who think like a proprietor. And the easiest way to get someone to think like a proprietor is actually give them a proprietorship.
Yes.
That means ownership.
Yes.
And, you know, if you want someone to think like a proprietor, that's an emotional thing. Mm. It's not a skill.
Yes.
You know, thinking like a proprietor. Like, you know Ginge, right? David Gingell. Gingell thought he owned Channel 9.
Mm. But that's what you want.
And that's why he ran it so well.
Yeah.
Because he ran it like a proprietor. Mm. Like, you know, he was born to run the joint. You know, that's his history as a Gingell packer. Although he'd hate me for saying that today. But still, he ran it because it was like he owned the joint. And I think it's so powerful when someone has proprietorship in a business or thinks like that, the business does so much better.
Yeah, and coming back to Macquarie Bank, that's how they make each 100%. Employee think. And that's also why I'm a believer in being a transparent manager, also hiring people around you that are smarter than you, which a lot of people don't do because they feel threatened. But back 100%. To your mate Kerry Packer, he would surround himself by the smartest people because it elevates the whole business. And when you're transparent, if you share with your staff how much money you're making or spending, their behaviour will automatically change so that they will spend less money and make more money because they can see it and they want to succeed just as much as you do if you've hired the same kind of people around you. So I'm running it and I think that's the different lens I've brought to this business. I've brought in the banker's mind, which doesn't always translate to every industry, but I just look at the numbers, I've cut costs, I've worked out what we need to do to increase revenue whilst allowing the people around me to do the jewellery and do what they know how to do.
I know you brought something else in. Because we're running out of time, so let's have a look at what you got.
So we decided also to add luxury homewares to the line and really it was sort of a gut feel. Morris and I were travelling in Europe and we found a store in Italy where you could design your own bespoke set of plates.
Homewares being plates and shit like that.
But yes. And so we thought, what a great idea. And really, again, back to the numbers, it's something we don't hold a lot of stock. You come in, you design it, you might want to put Mark all over the plate and we get it made. But it's also beautiful and meaningful and custom and carries on that tradition of Fairfax and Roberts that everything
is
custom
made.
So I'll show you. This is just a pattern that anyone, you know, can design their own sort of pattern.
It's pretty cool. I love the colours.
And you can put the platinum, you can put the gold around the edge. And you can make a whole beautiful set out of it. And what's special about it, it is yours. No one else will have it. You can come in and have any design you want.
So any colour. This is the stuff that, you know, if someone's getting married,
bridal,
Because I remember when I got married the very first time, which was like a fucking long time ago, it was 45 years ago, my grandmother, my yaya, she gave me a set of plates.
Yes. That's what everyone gets.
And what's one of the really fancy brands? Whatever
like
they call
it. Wedgwood or
Wedge, it was Wedgwood, Lee. But it had the Greek key in it because she's Greek, of course, and it had the Greek key in it, and it was sort of maroon color with white. And when I got divorced, which is 5 years later, my ex-wife took it, and I was filthy. and so I went out and bought myself a whole new set because only just to replace, I couldn't give a shit about it. I've still got it actually. I got it in my office down there. Mm. I bought it because I just wanted to make sure that I had something to mark the memory of what my grandmother had done for me.
Yes. I understand.
The occasion, not on my wedding, but the actual.
But we're describing that again.
I wanted that. Jewelry.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the feeling.
So what you're saying is if someone gets divorced and their missus is, or their husband has taken the thing that you got, like the plates, go to Fairfax and Roberts and they'll redesign it for you. In fact, they'll redesign something with you even fucking better.
And we'll have people come in, they'll put flowers on the plate to represent what's in their garden, or, you know, they might have the family crest on there. Family crest.
Have you got one of those?
No. I'm a long line of Hungarian peasants.
Are you serious? Same here.
Yeah, what's Greek my peasants. Who would know?
but some people get it.
The boat, their holiday
home.
Oh,
my God. Okay, but that's cool. Look, whatever floats your boat, so to speak, yeah.
Yeah, whatever you want. It's completely 100% custom.
What's it called?
This is called number 19 because we're on 19 Castlereagh Street.
Okay, so this line of product is called number 19, which is basically bespoke, so to speak, tableware. Beautiful. Is that the word tableware?
Yes, and then we import other brands again. We go and look around the world for brands that you can't get anywhere else that are exquisitely made. You know, I've got things here from Latvia, from Mexico.
Latvia, one of my favourite countries. Another one of my wife. She was Latvian. Okay, Irene Deutsch, great podcast. Love what you got here. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So good.
Thanks for listening to The Mentor. Audio and production is by Jess Morley. And production assistants, Jonathan Leondis.